is John chapter 18, beginning with the first verse. Sister Catherine, if you'd read four verses.
When Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the brook Cedron, where was a garden, into the which he entered, and his disciples, and Judas also, which betrayed him, knew the place. For Jesus ofttimes resorted thither with his disciples. Judas then, having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, cometh thither with lanterns and torches and weapons. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, Whom seek ye?
All right. So this is another evidence here that the preceding chapter was a prayer that Jesus had made to the Father before he arrived at the Garden of Gethsemane. And he's crossing the brook Kidron. Any comments on verse 1? Where there was a garden, and that garden we usually call Gethsemane. Verse 2, and Judas also, which betrayed him, knew the place, for Jesus oft times resorted thither with his disciples. Any comments? Perhaps it'd be well to read Luke 22, verse 39. Sister Chai, if you'd read that. Luke 22, verse 39.
And he came out and went as he went to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples also followed him.
Then there's another quotation, either in Mark or Luke, which adds the comment, as he wont, as he was accustomed to do. W-O-N-T. Has anyone got that one? I don't know if it's Mark 14 or Luke 21. There are other citations. Yes?
Not this one, but another one that makes it that he is accustomed to going
yeah.
there, or did that often. In Luke 21:37, and in the daytime he was teaching in the temple, and at night he went out and abode in the mount that is called the Mount of Olives.
All right, then there's another one that adds this expression. Was it Mark 14?
Mark 14:25 is a parallel, I think.
Yeah, right. If you look it up, I wanted to get that particular one. I don't know where it is, as I recall it. Is a comment where he was wont, meaning that he was accustomed to going there. And that had to do with the... Well, maybe he wasn't...
And he came out and went as he was wont to the Mount of Olives, and
yeah, that's
followed.
That's what it
is. Luke 22:39.
And this had to do with a few of those evenings when he came to the holy city at the end of his ministry. Remember, it was 5 days before that he presented himself to the nation. before his death, that a couple of those evenings he went there. And it would mean that on those feast days, that when they had feasts in Jerusalem, where Jesus would go to Jerusalem, he would sleep in this garden. That would be normally, unless he happened to be at a home. Judas then, having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, cometh thither with lanterns and torches and weapons. Any comment on that verse? Yes?
The number in a band, was that I had heard something that it was like somewhere from 200 to 600 men?
Well, it would be a fairly large number, because in some cases it said he comes with a multitude. Well, that would mean it would be more than 15 or 20 or 30. It would mean it would be a fairly sizable number. And in this number, there would be a special force or band of soldiery that was attached to the temple that was allotted to them by the Caesar, where they were permitted to do so. In other words, these that came to apprehend him were Jews, even the soldiery. That is also mentioned someplace, I forget where, because it'll say, and uses the word Jews.
Yes. The article I read, it was quite as though it were not the officers or the men from the Roman army. They did have their own,
yeah.
They were given.
They were allowed to have a little police force of their own among their own citizenry that the Romans permitted them to have. But one account says that Jesus tells that they were Jews. And they were sent at the instigation of the chief priests and Pharisees, it mentions here. And it's interesting that they come with lanterns and torches.
For the
record, yes.
These are the same ones that they would have followed him all night then and be yelling, crucify him. These would be the same group.
Well, some of them would be. Some of them would be, yes. Probably some would not be allowed into the high priest's residence when he was being tried. There would be some screening. They wouldn't just allow, because this is evidently a mixed group, and the nucleus of it are these officers, these that are assigned to police duty, let us use that word, as it were. But in addition to that, there were those of the household of Caiaphas. For instance, it mentions one his name someplace. I don't know. It probably would be in this account. Malchus and the chief servant. So it would be a mixed company. And the ones with the weapons probably were the ones of the officers, where the others would come with staves or some other. And it's interesting that they come in this fashion with the lights and weapons, says here. Well, the weapons, some of them were swords, and some were staves.
Okay.
Yes.
I think Mr. Bernice was
yes,
first.
Go on.
It seems very, probably not unusual, but strange that they should come so many with all that force for one man, when all through his ministry he was never violent in any way towards anyone. To come and get him this way is really, I think it's not necessary in
yes.
my way
all
of
right,
thinking.
Go on. I thought. All right, you through now?
Yeah.
All right. All right.
I was thinking along the same lines as Sister Bernice, that it was, this was quite a, I mean, just, and even the point about the lanterns and the torches, it was at night, and it almost seemed like with so many people and so much light and the weapons, he had slipped through their fingers before. And this time, they wanted to make sure he wasn't going to slip through their fingers.
That he couldn't take evasive action, that they could cordon off the area if there were a sufficient number.
Or really, frankly, would it be because they might have thought that maybe he was the son of God or had these powers and could do something? Maybe he thought with all the multitude there, he might have been a little leery. He did quite a bit.
Well, I think maybe, I don't know if they were thinking too much along that line. I think they just wanted to get him, and the more the number, the more secure they feel in catching if he tried to evade. Because, wait, there was another thought here I wanted to get. I forgot. Oh, well, that'll be a little later. This would be something to see. This crew coming with these lanterns in the dead of night. Let's read verse 4 we've read. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, Whom seek ye? You'll notice that if the account said, Whom seek ye? He said, Whom seek ye? You might get the impression he was like surprised. So this comment is put in by John to assure us that Jesus knew all about it in advance to its happening. Now, when this company are coming and approaching him, and he says, Whom seek ye? And then they say, I don't know if it's in this verse. Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus. Let us read 5 through 9.
They answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus saith unto them, I am he. And Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. As soon then as he had said unto them, I am he, they went backward and fell to the ground. Then asked he them again, Whom seek ye? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus answered, I have told you that I am he. If therefore ye seek me, let these go their way, that the saying might be fulfilled which he spake, Of them which thou gavest me have I lost none.
Now, notice that when he said, I am he. And then it says, you notice it doesn't say they fell backward. Say they went backward and then fell. So it's like a repulsive force that when he said that, they found that they were backpedaling. They went backward and then fell down. It's quite dramatic. So it's showing then to us what?
Jesus had the power all along. He could have resisted if he had so chosen. But his time was ready and he was ready to go.
All right, that's one thing, that he could have repelled them just through sheer magnetic force, as it were. Yes?
I think they were also a little bit in the long line of Sister Kathy's previous comment. Probably had a little bit in their minds everything that had been happening, and there was some fear there of the guards, not probably of the higher-ups, but of the guards that were actually going to lay hold on him. A little bit of fear that people were talking a lot about him. Was he a prophet? Was he the Messiah? And for him to react this way, to say that I am he, probably made them even more scared, because if he had like tried to evade them or tried to say, well, you know, not admit that it was him or whatever, then they would be more, well, you know, try to get him. But for him to be so bold as to say that this was him probably made them even more the nervous or whatever.
Identifying himself, it was more or less to protect his
little ones that were with him, that they would not be molested and no confusion with all this mob, so that they would do any harm, to sort of put an end to the matter quickly and let them know what the status quo was. It's me, take me, leave my disciple. Go.
Yes, that is subsequent in the verse. But he said this, I am he, twice. So the first time he said it probably was pretty strong, because it had this repelling effect. But the second time he said it, they sort of regained their composure to some extent, and he probably said it in a little different tone or voice. The same words. And then he reminded them that what he said, I have told you that I am he. If therefore ye seek me, if ye seek me, let these go. That's the purpose that they were sent out by the Pharisees and the chief priests. Their mission was to apprehend him. And notice how he ties in the fulfillment. John said that he did this, that Jesus purposely shielded his disciples in harmony with... with the prayer that he had just shortly before in the 17th chapter, where he prayed to the Father for them. And John is saying that when he did this, he did this in harmony with that prayer, that it was his desire that he would lose none because they had a ministry to perform. He didn't want them to be slain. And, of course, is a noble thing, too, from a standpoint of just... it was his deeds, his sayings, his claim that primarily bothered the leaders of the Jews. Let us read verse 10 through 14. Next, please.
Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and smote the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Then said Jesus unto Peter, put up thy sword into the sheath. The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it? Then the band and the captain and the officers of the Jews took Jesus and bound him, and led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that same year. Now Caiaphas was he who gave counsel to the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people.
Peter, having a sword, drew it and smote the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear, and gives his name, Malchus.
His right ear, and his name is Malchus. I wonder if there's some significance to this of making such a... that he had a servant, that he cut off an ear or something, but here's his name and his right ear.
Yes. Have you an answer?
No.
I don't either. Yes.
I don't either, but I have speculation. In identifying the name of the servant, I was wondering if it's possible that the servant is someone who maybe became a Christian later on from their experience, mm-hmm. and that's why he's like so identified.
Well, that sounds quite...
And that the very miracle might have caused him to put two and two together. This is the Son of God. Mm-hmm. That's such a wonderful thing to happen. He would have been minus an ear.
In Acts, it gives the name of the high priest who reprimanded. It gives four names in Acts somewhere. And I wonder if Malchus was one of those names. I'm not positive.
It's a servant.
Yeah, but I'm just curious.
In the concordance, it would be, it's not under the same spelling as here.
What is it there?
M-A-L-C-H-U-S. There's no other citation other than the John one.
All right, then those names are different, because it gives the name of Caiaphas, Annas, and John, and one other name. And I thought that other name possibly might have been Malchus, who told them, don't speak anymore on the subject. And then it said, of the high priest's kin. All right. That seems plausible, that it could very well have been one who later became a Christian. Then said Jesus to Peter, put up thy sword into the sheath. The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it? Now. Yes.
Originally, Jesus had told them to take the sword with them. When they had taken the two, he said it was enough. Was that in anticipation of such a thing, or just to show that his men would have fought for him if he had so desired?
Well, there would be this last thought that you mentioned, that it afforded Jesus the opportunity of forbidding them to fight on his behalf, that he had servants.
Yeah. Everybody turn your recorders off a second.
We're on verse 11, which we just mentioned. Now, Anna's sister Esther has said that second reason, that this afforded Jesus an opportunity to show that he had servants willing to fight for him, but he prohibited them from doing so. In other words, he not only had personal magnetic powers of frightening them off by his charisma, or he could have had his disciples trained to resist being taken captive. In other words, to put it another way, he submitted willingly to being apprehended. Yes?
Interesting, in one of the Matthew parallel accounts, Jesus mentions that, thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels?
Yeah.
So even though they had come with this very large band, of whatever number it was, which they probably thought was more than adequate to take care of this troublesome person at hand, that when Jesus probably said that, especially in light of the fact that they probably recognized that there was something different about him, and he makes that statement, they probably took it very seriously when he said that.
So the account shows that he could have avoided being taken captive had he so desired. Yes?
And this also brings out that wonderful quality of Peter, how he would have gone to the master's defense, that even though he might have had other problems later, he was the one who stepped forward.
He must have confused them, though, bringing that sword, not you. Shouldn't use it. But
I thought he was kind of noble in trying to defend the Lord.
Well, I think this is a part of Peter's education, too, because so we have three things. He could have called the Father's angels, he could have had his own servants fight for him, and he could have used his personal powers to avoid being taken captive. He submitted willingly. And then he quotes.
In the article I read, it suggests been the first one to make an attempt at doing something more, putting himself forward to do something to Jesus, that that's why Peter was moved to strike him on the ear. That it was provoked in some way. I forgot just what I was saying. He didn't say.
Well, he's no doubt the first one. And Peter probably was near Jesus at the time. And
But do you think that that ear must be significant? Because who would aim for the ear?
Well, I don't think he aimed for the ear. I think he meant to decapitate him.
Oh,
if
no.
It was probably a divinely guided sword to make sure it just cut the ear off. And then we'll look into this later again more. But he quotes the prayer that he had given in the garden earlier. The cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it? So now it shows his resignation. If possible, he prayed that that cup might not be necessary. But now he says, his willingness to drink it. Oh, we didn't read that.
Yes, we did.
We did? Then the band and the captain and officers and of the Jews, took Jesus and bound him. So this is another thing, too, that he was led, bound, probably with his hands behind his back. And led him away to, let us read verse 13. We had that, right?
Yeah.
And led him away to Annas first, for he was father-in-law to Caiaphas, which was the high priest that same year. Why did they lead him to Annas first?
Johnny, guess, because I mean, he was the most active. If Caiaphas was older, and he was the father-in-law to Caiaphas.
He'd be the older one.
Right,
yeah. So maybe out of deference, there were two high priests. And both were in service. And this is also mentioned someplace else in the gospel, that they were both high priests. Yes?
Luke 3:2 is where it says Annas and Caiaphas being the high priests.
All right, then Luke, that would be when John the Baptist was on the scene. They were high priests 3 years earlier, so they had been in office for some time. Both of them.
Just on that item, I had read recently that, and I don't know if it's true, that the high priest always kept the title of high priest even if they weren't active in the office.
Well, I don't think that so much that, because they usually when they died, that's the end of it. But because they served for life, unless for some other reason they couldn't. I think they're alternate. They always had an alternate. So the Jews had for few centuries, at least, two high priests. And they could figure one could be sick at the time, or immobilized, or on a journey, or some other reason, that they would always then be assured of having somebody to serve at a particular function. Now, Caiaphas was he which gave counsel to the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. And when did he do this? In other words, this shows that they had consulted together about Jesus before this occurred. And And that Caiaphas felt that he should be put to death, yes?
It was probably a couple weeks earlier. The account was in John 11, 49, and 50. And the beginning of the next chapter says 6 days before the Passover. So it was probably maybe 2 weeks earlier.
Yes.
Is that the Psalm 2:2, where it says the rulers take counsel together?
Yes, he would be one of the rulers, because you see, you had Caiaphas, Annas, Herod, Pilate. So you had both civil and religious rulers.
Right, right.
Yes.
It also shows that it was a premeditated act on their part.
Yes.
And
they were coming to this conclusion, of which and with the high priest concurring, particularly Caiaphas. Annas evidently had not gone that far originally, but Caiaphas, by stating that it would be expedient for it to have Jesus put to death, he may not have been the only one that thought that, but that sort of gave it the stamp of authenticity. And also, it was done, it says, by the Spirit. He was moved to prophetically make this statement. Another place in the Scripture said, this he did by the Spirit, or something like that, meaning that for the record's sake, he was moved to make this audible expression. It's just in the Bible here. Yes?
The fact is that one man should die for the people, but how does, is he talking about it? I mean, how do you talk people into killing another, killing Jesus, unless you knew the scriptures, that he does have to die?
Well, this is, he was done under the Spirit, under the influence of the Spirit, this happened. That's what I'm trying to say.
Not necessarily understanding it. Just
not understanding, that's right. He was moved by it. Saul was moved by the Spirit. There are, and Anna, the Balaam's ass was moved by the Spirit. I mean, you have all, yes?
I was just thinking, it was the Sanhedrin that would have been involved with this whole process of deciding what to do about Jesus.
Yeah.
And as such, they would, I guess he would speak of what kind of threat Jesus would pose in terms of like ecclesiastical rulership. He would be taking away all the prerogatives of the Sanhedrin because his ministry was gaining popularity. So it would be expedient that Jesus be killed, because all of the Sanhedrin would stand to lose their position of rulership and authority. I guess that's how they would.
This could be taken various ways. There are certain statements which are made in simplicity that can convey several varying thoughts. For one thing, it may be that if Jesus gained popularity by shielding themselves, their own jealousy, shielding that they had their own personal office that they feared might be threatened by his popularity, he might have been moved to make the statement from the standpoint that if Jesus becomes too popular and as a king, the Romans might clamp down on the Jews with far greater severity than they had been. And that rather than to suffer such reprisals that might logically come to pass if Jesus gained more and more followers, and Caesar saw that in Jesus there was a threat to Rome, and then the nation would suffer because of that, he's saying it's expedient that one man should die, lest we... they had been given some prerogatives. They were allowed to have their temple services. They were given certain liberties, so long they obeyed the law and paid the taxes to Caesar, things like that. They were given tolerance. But if Caesar saw them as being a threat, they would no longer have that privilege, and they would be subjugated to utter servility rather than being given some courtesies. So he could have that slant so that when he made that statement, others would think of it from the standpoint of what the Romans might do. But prophetically, we see like the ransom as being involved here. So from the standpoint of making that statement, the way I see it is, this is recorded. This is recorded for millions and billions of years in the future, that when this is seen and he makes that statement, people will say, yes, it is, it was expedient that he should die. Even the whole world might perish, the whole race of Adam, expedient that he died. So there'd be different play on the word, and sometimes out of the mouth of even babes can come forth profound wisdom that isn't inherent in them. It's just that, yes.
Be mighty surprised in the resurrection that he made that argument.
Yes. Can we go to the next verse? We haven't read that now. 15 through 18.
And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. That disciple was known unto the high priest, and went in with Jesus into the palace of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door without. Then went out that other disciple, which was known unto the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. Then saith the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, Art not thou also one of this man's disciples? He saith, I am not. And the servants and officers stood there, who had made a fire of coals, for it was cold. And they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself.
All right. Now verse 15, Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Who was the other disciple?
John.
And that disciple was known unto the high priest. Now that's an interesting item. In what way was John... This would be John, the son of Zebedee. John of Zebedee, be known unto the high priest. There is a family relationship, probably through marriage. Probably through marriage, because it tells about John that John and Peter were untrained, unschooled, unlearned men, and thus to be known of the high priest, it probably would be done through intermarriage, maybe one of the daughters of Zebedee might have been involved in marriage with one of the kin of the high priest, not necessarily directly, but at least close enough that he had access, that he could go into the palace. He was known. Very interesting, that item. And went in with Jesus into the palace of the high priest. So those that of this multitude that were allowed in the door, John was allowed in with the others who went into the palace. Yes, courtyard, to be a courtyard, yes.
I don't recall who it was who suggested it, but it was suggested in a discourse not too long ago that it was not John that went in to the court, and the line of reasoning was that John was always referred to as the one whom Jesus loved. But this is a scriptural example where John refers to himself in a different term, another disciple.
Yeah.
Or another disciple, right. So
it was typical, and there's another place where he used another expression.
Right. So this is just a good thing to keep in mind if you ever hear that discourse.
Yes.
Yeah.
No,
in John 20 verse 2, she riseth and cometh to Simon Peter, and to the other disciple whom Jesus loved. So we're choosing both those phrases.
I don't remember whether I spoke to him afterwards or not. It's been a little while ago.
On such things, they should really be corrected, I would think.
Well, I don't know if it was.
Well, I don't think there'd be enough people who would know this, I would say.
But don't you want
to be a
teacher?
Well, you can have aberrations of the.
It's not.
It's just that. That would be so.
It's not. It's he's unnamed. In terms of his presence there. So,
same with in the beginning of his ministry, there were the two talking together when John announced, "This is he of whom I have said, that he that cometh after me is greater than me," and so forth. And then they followed Jesus to see where he would be that evening. And then Andrew goes and gets Peter, so we know Andrew was one of those two, but evidently the other one was John. John, the Apostle John. Yes?
I think it's rather important in a way to bring out that the others did flee. Peter, of course, did deny him, but John did go in. He didn't desert. I think it's a rather noble a characteristic that should be.
Yes, you could see that it was noble of Peter to risk himself while all the others fled, and the same is true of John. And both had the same kindred spirit. The only thing, John was known of the family and could gain access where Peter couldn't. But Peter got in anyway, and when the door was opened to him, he went in. So he had the same motivation power as Peter. Peter had the same.
The one that lost his robe or his wrap.
That's John.
Is that John also?
John Mark. John Mark. Doesn't say that, you can't prove it, but the evidence seems to be that way. And he evidently had been awoken out of sleep. See, he was not. Mark is not an apostle, but he was Peter's right-hand man for a number of years. And then after Peter, towards the close of Peter's ministry, he went over to Paul. He also was with Paul early in his ministry, but was barred due to a certain thing that he had done, and later reinstated by Paul. But in the meantime, when the time he was disregarded as far as following with Paul, he sided with Peter for a while. And thus, the Gospel of Mark is sometimes called the Gospel of Peter. Peter's Gospel. Because Mark merely wrote it.
Yes, to
Mark.
John being in the family, able to go in and out, didn't they know that he was a follower of Christ too, or put any pressure on him in that?
I think they were so delighted they had Jesus and they had him bound up and all those things are furthest from their mind at the moment. And it's only these that idly watched, even Peter. It's the servant that notices him, or another man that notices. Malchus himself noticed later Peter. But in the tumult of going in with that group, I think it's wouldn't be. They just screamed that certain ones would go in. The band, the officers, they'd be allowed in. Here's John, you go. You know, no thought. Especially that way. Yes?
It seems like there were some that did know that from the comment.
Didn't know what?
That did know that John was one of Jesus' disciples from the comment that the maid made, or the damsel, she said, when she said to Peter, she said, "Art not thou also one of these this man's disciples. It seemed like she knew some. Mm-hmm. But she's saying, are you also one?
But Jesus was the focus of attention. See, that's my point. That they're so glad to get him because they did heed his instruction. Don't leave my leave the rest alone. They didn't try to apprehend the others who fled away. They let him go. And they followed. Peter and John followed behind. But when they went in, then John went in also through the door. Now we're down to verse 15. And verse 16, Peter stood at the door without. This is interesting. Peter stood at the door without. There's something like a little pathos there. Then went out that other disciple, which was known unto the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. And that very act of John to this one who opened the door, she might have read, saw Peter was one of the disciples too, had that suspicion. But didn't say anything because she obeyed John in letting him in. But then the next verse it says that. Then said the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, art not thou also of this man's disciples? And he saith, I am not. Wow. But that was the first of the three times. And the servants and officers stood there, and they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. This is interesting, too. We are given about the weather. And this is in the, what time of year?
Spring.
And this would be early spring. This would be very early, and probably on that particular year, quite early. Because Jesus died April 3rd.
And in the middle of the night it was.
Yeah, that's right. And that's pretty, at the beginning of April, it's at the end of the March. And of course, the weather in Israel is somewhat comparable to here. Milder, though, milder. But not that mild.
Surprising that Jesus and the disciples could sleep out, though, in the garden.
They could have a fire going there, and they could be bundle themselves in a way that where they could withstand the coolness of the night. And when these went out to get him, there was probably a hurry-up job when they went out. The officers with Judas to apprehend.
He was surrounded then by the officers and the servants, so he was in a little bit awkward position.
Yeah.
That's what made it tougher, I guess, for him to stand firm.
Imagine if you could be, for a few moments, like, be in Peter. Be Peter. And follow Jesus like that. Be led into the door. And be warming yourself beside this fire with these officers, and having previously struck off the high priest's servant's ear, so what he probably felt like in this strange experience. He must have been somewhat like a zombie, because he had denied Christ earlier. So I think he was really pretty benumbed. Low point. Yes.
And it's a good lesson for us. Things go tough, and we have to make our choice of whom we stand for.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how difficult it might be, we have to take the Lord's stand.
The lesson would be not that you would rely on the Lord's mercy and forgiveness and follow with that example. it's as though this happened to Peter as a warning and an admonition of probably an experience that will come to many of the Lord's people at the end of the age, where they will be given this experience. But then if they deny, that doesn't mean that they're going to be forgiven, you know, by any means. But one thing we do see, that Peter's contrition and sorrow was quite different than Judas. And we have to wait on this a little later before we go into that subject matter. But he stood with them and warmed himself. Yeah.
What's the setting here as far as the place that they're at and where the high priest and Jesus were, as opposed to where this outer part is? And what is this? Was this Caiaphas's like personal house?
Yes.
Or wasn't like a place where he would? It wasn't like any place near the temple, or
it was near the temple, but down south of it, and west, southwest of the temple area. It'd be in that place where they call with that domed roof outside. It's outside. But they call it the place of the Last Supper, things like that. But in that area, in that area.
Outside,
so they really would be retracing much of the way that Jesus originally came, because when he was at this home in an upper room and had the Last Supper and then left and then came to the Brook of Kedron, crossed over, went in the garden, it was from that general locale, only it's a little further up the road that we believe that the high priest's palace was.
So it really was a palace type of
thing? Yes, a palace, a stone structure, and appropriate for the high priest.
Were they near the temple area?
Yeah, they're near, but not within the confines. Not within the confines. Yes,
I read somewhere there was a place called the Place of the Hewn Stone, or is that where the actual trial took place, or?
Well, we see he had like three trials, as it were, before he went to Pilate, Annas' house. But I believe Annas' place was very close to the other. It was just like an adjunct to the other. So it'd be like going from one courtyard to another. But when John entered the door, it was to Caiaphas' palace or residence that he was let in. And Peter goes in there. But Jesus was taken to the father-in-law. So, and that must have been very close by, the father-in-law, because he's then tried before Annas. Then he's brought to Caiaphas, and in this being brought to Caiaphas, that's where Jesus crossed Peter's path, as it were. Because remember, he looked at him. He gave him a look. But Peter's warming himself, and during this warming, Jesus is being questioned. And this would be a very low period, too. If you're in sorrow, and it's a cold night, you probably feel that cold far more acutely than under any other experience. The same with our Lord in that cold night and the trial that he had. And that this is all allowed as a, just like you try, you make iron into steel, as it were, by this heating and cooling process, that this is a part of crystallization of character. To go. Only here it's cold, but the same principle as heat. It's an extreme condition to produce certain results. Yes?
And again, referring to the article, I said the humiliation that they had to face, being bound, taken like a malefactor, as though we had done something.
Yeah.
you know, those who wouldn't know the situation would think that this man really must have done something terrible, you know.
And by the time they were finished, he was quite probably bedraggled, too, by the experience he was going through for a while, until he was released and brought, as it were, to Caiaphas. I mean to Pilate. I'm talking about it much later. We read, and Peter stood and warmed himself, etc. Art not thou also one of his disciples? He denied, said, I am not. One of the servants of the high priest, being his kinsman, whose ear Peter cut off, say, did not I see thee in the garden with him?
We're not that far.
We're not there?
We're not that far.
Oh, boy.
We're more like 18.
Oh, boy. Excuse, thank you. And the servants and officers stood there who had made fire of coals. It was cold. They warmed themselves. Peter stood with them and warmed himself. Verse 19. Let us read then. Oh, wait. What time is it?
Almost 12:30.
Oh, yes. We haven't got time for that, really. We'll have to. This would be the best place to stop because this is a new unit, as it were. So we'll conclude with verse 18, and God willing, and the next study would commence with verse 19.